Tanya, thanks again. So I want to tell you about some work that's currently in progress with Ruth Gregory and Christos Charmousis. It should be out quite soon, and it's entitled Exercising Self-Acceleration. That's what we've called it at the moment. It might still change. And basically, what I want to present today is this. We're really looking at accelerating brain universes. So prior to this work, I think there's essentially been sort of two ways in which you might make a brain universe accelerate. On the one hand, you've got those ways that are just the same as in 4D GR. So you might put in an excess of vacuum energy, so you've got a cosmological constant on the brain, and that just makes it accelerate. It's no different to what happens in 4D GR. There is an alternative that has appeared in some of the brain world literature, and this is that gravity is actually modified, and it's actually the modification of gravity which gives you your acceleration. And the DGP model in particular is an example of self-acceleration, whereby you actually have zero vacuum energy on the brain, and yet the universe, actually, the brain universe actually accelerates in a De Sitter type of acceleration. And so this is the other kind, but actually these types of, I mean, Nemanja, Ruth, Christos and myself, we did look at those solutions, and we found them to be perturbatively unstable due to the presence of a ghost-like instability. So actually what I want to present today is a third type of way of accelerating a brain universe, and that's essentially it's more of a power law type of acceleration. So whereas for the self-accelerating models of DGP, the vacuum configuration is actually a De Sitter universe, in our case the vacuum configuration is actually going to be Minkowski, and it's only when we actually put matter or radiation, more so matter, but matter or radiation on the brain itself, that due to the modification of gravity, that brain will actually accelerate, power law type of acceleration. Of course, there's certain consistency checks which we have to run through, and I'm going to go through that today. We're going to check the stability of these models, and hopefully at the end you'll see that there are sort of seemingly stable solutions that sort of can accelerate the universe in a way we might want. Okay, so I'm going to give you a brief outline of the talk. So firstly, I just want to very briefly just introduce the dark energy problem. Obviously, I'm sure everyone knows what it is, but just to be sort of, you know, have a consistent talk. And then I want to talk about the idea of solving a dark energy problem by modifying gravity. And I want to introduce these ideas of self-acceleration, as in the DGP model. And I want to briefly say why that doesn't work. And then I'm going to introduce what I've slightly cheekily called the CGP model, which stands for Charmousis, Gregory and Fadila. We are not actually calling it that. A bit cheeky. But so I really want to introduce the basics of the model that we're looking at. And it's going to be a modification of the DGP model, but with certain symmetries broken. And I want to focus on linearized perturbations about that solution. Because it was really, by properly looking at linearized perturbations about the DGP model, we found them to be unstable. So I'm going to apply the same process here to our new model, and I'm going to filter out all those solutions which are perturbatively unstable, which contain ghosts. And there will be some solutions left over, and I'm going to look at the cosmological behavior of those solutions, and I'm going to find that one can indeed get some sort of acceleration in those models. Okay, so the dark energy problem, very, very lightningly quickly, what is it? Okay, so over a certain range of distance scales, basically down to 0.1 millimetre up to about the size of the observable universe, gravity is pretty well described by four-dimensional general relativity. And that's just given by Einstein's equation, of course. And but we have noticed recently the universe is currently accelerating. So can we account for this acceleration in four-dimensional GR? And you can. And you have to do that by introducing some sort of exotic matter contribution on the right-hand side of the equation, a cosmological constant, if you like, that would be one type, that would give you the acceleration that you require. Now, there is a problem there, because if you want to agree with observation, that cosmological constant has to be very, very small. Okay? But what is the natural scale for this cosmological constant? Well, it depends on the sort of theory that you're, the field theory that you use to introduce it. But let's imagine it's cut off at a scale M Planck. I mean, we're talking about gravity here, so that might be a natural scale at which to cut off the theory. Then you would expect this cosmological constant to go like M Planck to the 4. And this would make it 10 to the 120 times too big compared to the observed value. So this is a horrible fine-tuning problem. So recently people have been thinking about an alternative, and that's that this cosmic speed-up is actually a sign of new gravitational physics kicking in at large distances. And it wouldn't be the first time that that actually these sort of strange effects have resulted in actually a lack of signal that our understanding of gravity has been lacking. Back when at the turn of the last century, well, the one before, when people were looking at the shape of Mercury's orbit, they realised that there was this perihelion precession. And it was speculated at the time that Newtonian physics clearly couldn't explain this. So it was speculated that there existed a dark planet, which was called Vulcan, that was affecting Mercury's orbit. And we now know, of course, that there is no such dark planet called Vulcan, that why actually the problem was it was a signal that our understanding of gravity was breaking down and we had to introduce general relativity. So perhaps it could be the same thing here. So instead of focusing on how we should, what should we do to the right-hand side of Einstein's equation, what particle physics content we need to put into the matter, perhaps we should think about modifying the left-hand side. So, but of course, it's not very easy to modify gravity. And any theory of modified gravity has to pass, well, three tests, I'm going to say. First is naturalness. You don't want to introduce billions and billions of parameters in your theory because you can probably prove anything. So you want a theory that has some sort of naturalness. Of course, it has to agree with experiment. It goes without saying. And in particular, the experiments that you want to, you'd sort of try to agree with are on solar system scales. So you would hope to reproduce Newton's law, 1/r² law, and you would hope to reproduce the results for light bending, and you want to get all the numbers right. And the last condition is theoretical consistency, and this tends to be one of the hardest ones to get right. And in particular, typically we find that any theory of modified gravity will often introduces instabilities, ghost-like instabilities. That's what happened with DGP.
I think you said this in the comments, but naturalness just means lack of free parameters.
Essentially, yeah. That's what I mean by that.
Right, so GR would be natural even though it's got this lambda that's...
Yeah, I think just... Yeah, that's
okay.
Not... Yeah. But I'm thinking about modifying gravity now. Like,
sure.
So I'm looking at it from another perspective. But, I mean, if you just plug in so much freedom, then you could probably prove anything. Okay, so a couple of examples of modified theories of gravity. An early one is called Brans-Dickey gravity. This pretty much passes the naturalness test. Agreeing with experiment, well, that will fail unless the Brans-Dickey parameter is huge. And it's theoretically consistent. The DGP model, on the other hand, which I will discuss shortly, yeah, it's okay with naturalness. 2 is a little bit debatable. I'm not really going to go into that. 3 definitely fails, as I'm sure Emmanuel will agree with me. Okay, so modified gravity and self-acceleration. So I want to introduce this idea of self-acceleration now. So let's suppose we have no vacuum energy. Okay, so there really is no vacuum energy whatsoever. Then in 4D general relativity, the Freeman equation is just given by this formula here. Okay, rho goes like h squared. As is well known. In a modified theory of gravity, this formula gets changed. Of course it will. So generically, I'm going to say that rho is f of h squared. And one of the things is, as you actually look at the vacuum, when you look at a vacuum, so you literally get rid of all the energy, then clearly in GR, when rho goes to zero, then you can only have a flat solution with h equals zero. In a modified theory of gravity, well, let's think about what happens as rho goes to zero. Well, if f has got a zero at some other point, some point at h0, then that is another possible vacuum solution. That's what we call the self-accelerating vacuum. So even though you've taken away all the vacuum energy, there's absolutely no energy at all in your universe, the universe still accelerates. So this is what we mean by a self-accelerating solution. So in this case, the cosmic acceleration is entirely due to the modification of gravity. So a DGP model is an example of this. Let me briefly tell you what a DGP model is. So the idea is that we live on a single three-brain embedded in some infinite empty space. So we have, here's our single three-brain, and we've got 5D Minkowski space on either side. And we impose Z2 symmetry, so everything to the left of the brain is the same as everything to the right. And the key feature of DGP is that you have this induced curvature on the brain. Now, where does this induced curvature come from? It comes from sort of loop corrections to the brain stress energy tensor. You can get it from finite width effects. It's a pretty natural term to introduce. And one of the things that it achieves is it ensures that at short distances, gravity will look 4D because it gets trapped on the brain by this large curvature on the brain. At large distances, the gravity starts to leak into the extra dimension and you get an infrared modification of gravity. Okay, so here's the action. So, like I said, in the bulk, we just have the Einstein-Hilbert action with no cosmological constant. And then this is the key feature here, that on the brain we have this induced curvature weighted by this large Planck scale here. Okay. So, this is a modified theory of gravity. It gives us a modified Friedman equation. And this is the F that you get. So you get this contribution here, which is just coming from the induced curvature on the brain. And then we get two branches coming from the bulk. Okay? And the branch of interest for self-acceleration is this negative branch, because clearly F has zero at some non-zero value of H. That's the self-accelerating solution. So remember the three tests. Naturalness, well, yes, I'm going to say the novel model is pretty natural. Okay, you could debate that if you want, but let's just say it is. Things get worse. Agreeable experiment, well, this is open to question. Like I said, essentially this large induced curvature will trap gravity on the brain at short distances, and you can mimic 4DGR at short distances. However, the linearized theory is actually a scalar tensor theory of gravity, so that would suggest that solid system tests do actually fail. But there's some debate in the literature at the moment that actually you can't trust the linearized theory on solid system scale, so I don't want to say anything more about that. And the man is pulling your face out. But I don't want to really focus on that. What's much worse for me is this theoretical inconsistency. Okay, so what we actually have is our ghosts. So perturbations about this solution contain a ghost. And the ghost typically appears in the scalar sector. Actually, what it is it's a combination of the radion, which is like fluctuations in the position of the brain. And
just a small comment about your reference. There was one before, right? Multiple
accurate
answers.
Okay.
Just
yeah.
To be fair.
All right, yeah. Okay. Yes, this is true. So this goes to like combination of the radion and the a helicity zero component of the graviton, of one of the gravitons, the light graviton. And so why is it goes bad? Well, essentially it's got negative kinetic energy, so if it couples to ordinary fields, it's going to want to dump transfer energy into those fields, and this rapidly destabilizes the system. This is sort of essentially shown by myself and Nemanja and Ruth and Christos and these guys as well, and as Nemanja says, Luti Rotati and Parati as well, a little earlier. Okay. So will self-acceleration generically lead to ghosts? Is this whole idea of self-acceleration, does that mean ghosts? Well, I don't have any proof of that, but I'm going to say the answer is yes, probably. Okay. And why? Well, this is all very speculative and hand-wavy, and there's various other arguments you could give, but essentially what you can say is that perturbations about these solutions, there's two sort of key facts. Firstly, this background solution is De Sitter. Okay? I mean, that by definition of what we mean by these self-accelerating solutions, the background is De Sitter. Secondly, again, there's an infrared modification of gravity. Now, that means that you must have an ultralight graviton. So ultralight graviton propagating on a De Sitter background, you get in serious danger of getting a ghost, because it's well known that if the mass of a graviton is in this range in De Sitter space, then you get a ghost. Okay, now this is like very, very hand-wavy, very speculative. Basically, all I want to say is I don't want to think about self-accelerating solutions anymore. I want to think about an alternative. The evidence is from our analysis with DGP that they could well contain ghosts, but an actual proof of that is I'm not going to present that. I don't have one. Okay, so what would be a possible alternative to self-acceleration? And the idea is that the vacuum, rather than having a de Sitter vacuum, that the vacuum's actually flat, but we still get acceleration at some other stage in the cosmological evolution, and this, again, this acceleration comes from the modification of gravity. So that's the difference. And the model I want to present is this CGP model. So we start off with DGP and we make some changes. So here's DGP. Let's get rid of the Z2 symmetry. Let's break that. So now we no longer have sort of this association with what's on the left and what's on the right. I also want to generalize that Minkowski space to anti-de Sitter space. So, I mean, you could think of, for a very small cosmological cost, negative cosmological cost, and this would then approach the Minkowski solution, but this is the sort of general setup I want to consider. And I'm going to keep this induced curvature. So the action I want to look at is essentially, again, so I've got this broken the Z2 symmetry here now, so I've got to identify whether I mean sort of one is like the left-hand side, two is the right-hand side, essentially. And I'm going to allow the cosmological constants on either side to vary. They can be different, so that's quite natural in domain wall scenarios, so that's not so crazy. I'm also going to allow the Planck scales to potentially be different on either side of the brain, the fundamental 5D Planck scales. Now, that might seem a little bit more unusual, but actually, if you think about it, it's not so crazy either. I mean, if you imagine that this came from some high-dimensional theory, now you can imagine, say, that the dilaton was stabilized in different vacuum on either side, and this would give you different values for the 5D Planck scale. So that's the setup. Again, we've got this induced curvature theorem. I've got some tension here as well. And the reason I've got tension is because, basically, I've introduced some cosmological constants in the bulk, right? I don't want any vacuum energy on the brain, so I need to cancel off the vacuum energy on the brain by introducing some tension, okay? So it's actually consistent that I should introduce, so this is going to be fine-tuned against the bulk values to give me zero cosmological constant on the brain, so any acceleration I do get will come from the modification of gravity. So the equations of motion, well, in any given side of the bulk, it's just Einstein's equation with the cosmological constant. And this is the subtlety now. The brain equations of motion, well, there's actually two equations. One you normally take for granted because you impose Z2 symmetry, but here we don't have it. So what we have to remind ourselves is that the induced curvature, the induced metric on the brain should be the same depending on whether you look at it from the left-hand side or the right-hand side. Okay? So this delta here means just the difference between the left and the right. Okay, so it's got to be the same. It's got to have continuity of the metric at the brain. The second one is the familiar Israel equation. So this relates the extrinsic curvature as viewed from the left and the right. So these angle brackets mean take an average. To basically the source terms on the brain. So we have this Einstein tensor coming from here, the tension term, and then contribution from the matter. Okay, so background solution. Well, I want to consider flat brains. So those are Minkowski brains. So I'm going to take a Poincaré slicing of ADS in any given region of the bulk. Okay, so there's two ways in which I can do that. I can have one where the warp factor, this A, grows as you move away from the brain and you hit the ADS boundary. Or you could have the opposite, where it decays as you go away from the brain and you hit the ADS horizon. That's essentially the two scenarios. So imagine how there's three different setups you can then have. You can have a setup where it grows on either side of the brain, or it decays on either side of the brain, or one where it grows on one side and one where it decays on the other side. They're the three different scenarios that you could have. So this is sort of all incorporated in this here. Okay.
But the one where you're ending on the horizon on both sides, that's the least interesting.
It is, yeah. I'm just including it here for completeness.
You don't want gravity with modified couplings due to
it's just random.
So it's most normal.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to, in fact, just. I'm only including it here for completeness, but
so
yeah.
So, which scenario, I mean, if you don't mind me, which one you want to consider? The one that goes up on both sides?
Actually, the most. There's various. The cosmological ones I will consider at the end, probably the most interesting one is one where it decays on one side and grows on the other. And there's another one where it's it grows on one side and it's actually Minkowski on the other side. Because you mean I could take these k's to these
it grows
here.
On one side and Minkowski on the
yeah.
other side. Okay, all right.
Okay. We'll come to the specifics later on, but this is just being introduced for completeness. Okay, so I've imposed that I'm going to have flat brains. So as I said, this means I can have no effective cosmological constant on the brain. So this gives me a fine-tuned tension. This is just the same as the Randall-Sundin fine-tuning, but generalized to this setup. Okay, so now let's look at linearized perturbations. So remember, in DGP model, by looking properly at linearized perturbations, that we discovered that there was this ghost. And we need to check for that again. So what I want to do is I want to eliminate all those models that contain a perturbative ghost. Okay, so let's consider a generic perturbation on one given side of the brain. So you just perturb the metric in this general way, and in principle as well, the brain position can flutter. Okay. And it can flutter by different amounts depending on which side of the brain you're on. As long as you get all your matching right. And typically you decompose your perturbation in terms of tensors, vectors and scalars with respect to the Poincaré group. So here I've got my transverse trace-free tensor, I've got some divergence-free vectors, and then I've got four scalars. And I look at the equations of motion. So these are the vacuum perturbations, right? So this is the bulk equation of motion, this is the brain equation of motion. Because it's a vacuum perturbation, I haven't got anything on the right-hand side there. And I'm going to assume that tensors, vectors and scalars do not mix, and that I can treat them independently. Now, this is an assumption at this stage. One of the lessons that we found when we looked at the DGP case was that actually, in certain limits, the tensors and the scalars did mix. It was because of that that people actually missed the ghost for a long time. But at the moment, I'm going to assume they do not mix, but I am going to come back to that later and find that this was consistent. We have looked at the full set of perturbations, but let me just focus on the scalar sector because that's where you would expect the ghost to appear. And so you just need these scalar equations of motion in the book. So here I've introduced the two gauge invariants, which are this X and Y. These are called Bardeen gauge invariants. So the equations of motion can be expressed in terms of them. These are what they are.
So are you going to actually show us the equations for constructing the background in the first place? I'm sort of thinking there should probably be some consistency conditions.
I haven't actually shown you them now, but...
You have not?
So
in some sense it's kind of, you know, if you have ADS on one side and Minkowski on the other,
you can
conjunction conditions, presumably you can't have that repulse detection brain unless you have these DGT terms on the brain, correct?
I never said the brain had explicitly positive tension.
I see. So you're allowing the brain to have positive tension.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of depends on the various setup that you have. I mean, this was, I think, it was one of the previous slides. I had the expression for what the tension had to be.
Okay. So you know, to follow up also on John's comment, and you know, so this is very similar, at least in spirit. Some of this sounds very similar to the famous Gregory Rubakov Siberiakov story.
Right, okay, yeah.
Right, where you had basically like a flank brain and you had warped ADS going down, and you have a TEV brain with a negative tension and Minkowski on the
other side. Yes.
And in that analysis, there was a ghost.
Yes.
And so here you're going to tell us that ghost disappears?
It's very subtle, but there's a couple of limits where it does.
Can you just sort of, before, you know, you show us the details, why?
Why? Because... Well, one of the situations where the ghost disappears is where you have a Minkowski bulk on one side.
Yes.
And the reason the ghost disappears there is because there's extra symmetry from the fact that it's Minkowski. So you've got extra translational symmetry that you don't have in ADS. That's why it disappears, because of that symmetry. There's
in your setup?
In our setup.
But why didn't that symmetry was also there in the old...
No, it wasn't, because they had the ADS region with the two brains.
Yes.
And then... So that symmetry was actually broken there. So they had a real radium, which corresponded to the fluctuation in the distance between those two brains. Now, we don't have that here. The radium actually decouples completely.
Oh, you're saying because you don't have the blank brain?
Yes. It decouples. if you put in a regulator, you would. So
does radium really care about the plant brain? In normal warp situations, radium doesn't like to live on the plant brain, likes to live on the IR brain.
Well, that's true, but if you take the. Okay, so you have to be a little bit careful in Minkowski space, because it's.
Okay, so it goes in details. All
right, it's in the details, right? Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's wait and then maybe we'll understand.
Okay. So anyway, these are the solutions to the bulk equations of motion. Essentially, these gauge invariants go like sort of u over a squared, where this u is massless. And so now we have four scalar degrees of freedom. Basically, I'm going to call these u's, the radion. They're like the bulk gauge invariant. So we've got u1 and u2, one for each side. And we've also still got the brain bending terms, f1 and f2. So we've got 4 degrees of freedom. There's still 2 more boundary conditions to impose. We haven't imposed continuity of the metric or the Israel equations. So once we've imposed them, we should be left with 2 scalars. And actually, it's easy to see why you would expect there to be 2 scalars if you introduce regulator brains. So let's suppose at the moment we only have 1 brain. Now let's put some regulator brain in the bulk, okay? And you can ask, what are these 2 remaining scalars? Well, they're essentially the fluctuation of the distance between the brain and the regulator, and that's 2 distances, right? So this is the 2 degrees of freedom that are left over. Okay, so actually, the use of regulator brains is very good for sort of normalizing this whole thing. So let me now sort of impose the boundary condition at the brain itself. And to do that, it's useful to go to Gaussian normal coordinates and fix the brain to be at y equals 0. And the perturbation takes on 2 values, two sort of pieces. There's this piece, h mu of u, which is essentially the gauge invariant. This is the radion. Okay. And there's this other piece, which I've called h mu a, which is actually pure gauge in the bulk. It's related to u and f in this way. It's pure gauge in the bulk. I can actually gauge this away, but only the expense of bending the brain. Okay, I can't gauge this piece away. This is the gauge invariant. Okay, and this is where I want to go back to that idea that the tensors and scalars don't mix, because this is the sort of real physical dynamics is in this piece. And look at this mode. It actually, because this del squared of u is 0, this actually behaves like a massless tensor mode. Okay, so it will only mix. Can it mix with the tensors? It will mix with the tensors if there is a massless tensor mode. And there's only a massless tensor mode if the bulk volume is finite. And I'm going to say we don't want interest in the case where the bulk volume is finite, because then we don't get infrared modification of gravity. So I want to focus on the case where the bulk volume is infinite. So this rules out that case of 2 decaying warp factors that Emmanuel mentioned earlier. So by assuming that the bulk is infinite, it is consistent to treat scalars and tensors independently of one another. Okay. We'll see. Sometimes not, sometimes it is. Okay, so the continuity condition, well, that just gives you that basically this A should be the same on the left as well as on the right. And there's also a relationship coming from the Israel equation. So essentially we've got U1, U2, now A1 and A2, and we've managed to reduce those 4 degrees of freedom down to 2. Okay, so the fluctuation of proper distance to the regulator is given by this expression here. Okay, we're going to use this shortly. So I want to calculate the 4D effective action. So I calculate the 4D effective action between... So basically, I want to integrate out of the bulk now. So I imagine now I've still got those regulator brains in there, sort of regularizing what I'm doing. And I can integrate out of the bulk. This is what I get for the effective action. Now remember, I want to look at the effective action because it's that that's going to tell me whether the sign of the kinetic terms is the right sign or ghost-like sign. Now, let's remove the regulators now. Let's go back to our original model. Okay, so I take y out to either infinity or... So basically I send these regulators either off to the ADS boundary or to the ADS horizon, whatever was originally on that side. Now, when I send it off to the ADS boundary, this is this case, this fluctuation in the distance between the brains, remains finite. When I have an ADS horizon, it becomes infinite. So it's the case of an ADS horizon that tells me that this thing U is now non-normalizable, which relates to what Emmanuel was just asking. This thing U becomes non-normalizable for the case where you retain the ADS boundary, ADS horizon, sorry. If you retain the ADS boundary, it remains normalizable. And that kind of makes sense because, remember, if you shine a light ray towards the ADS boundary, it will reflect back in a finite proper time. So in some sense, you can sort of measure distances, yeah, measure fluctuations in the distance of the brain when you retain the ADS boundary, but not if you retain the ADS horizon, because if you shine a light ray towards the ADS horizon, then you get it back.
What about Minkowski?
Minkowski is the same as the ADS horizon case.
Okay, good. Right. So this mode is not there in the infinite volume case?
No. It's infinite volume for ADS.
If you keep the ADS boundary or Minkowski's infinite volume?
Yeah, but you will keep it if you've got the ADS boundary.
Right.
But you lose it if you've got Minkowski or the ADS horizon.
Oh, I see.
So it's more to do with the...
It's really the localization, not just the infinite boundary, it's the barrier.
Yeah, essentially. Okay. So this is a quick summary of what I've just said. If you've got the ADS boundary in a bulk, you get a normalizable radon. In all other cases, the radon is non-normalizable. So we just forget about it. It's not normalizable, let's throw it away. Okay, so just to summarize. If we have the ADS horizon on both sides, then all the scalars decouple. Okay? Now this corresponds to the case of a finite volume bulk, so we're not actually interested in that because we're not going to get an infrared modification of gravity. So let's not mention it again. If we have Minkowski space on either side, then again it turns out that all scalars decouple. And this is because, for the reason I sort of touched on earlier, that you have this extra translational symmetry when you have Minkowski. That's why they go away in that case. So this only has to be on one side, right? You could have ADS space on the other side and still all the scalars will decouple. And finally, all other scenarios, it turns out you only actually get one scalar degree of freedom survives. Okay, so this is now where you've got, say, the ADS boundary on one side and perhaps the ADS horizon on the other, or two ADS boundaries. And in this case, only one scalar degree of freedom survives. Essentially, what happens is you take the regulated brains off to the end, take them away, you've got like a centre of mass fluctuation in the proper distance, and you've got a relative fluctuation. It's the centre of mass fluctuation that survives, the relative fluctuation in the proper distance between the brain and the regulator. That sort of just disappears, it drops out. Okay, so now we can say, this is the sort of interesting scenario, because what this means now is we know when we've got a ghost or not. Basically, we get a ghost when this term here is negative. So that would correspond to an instability. To avoid a ghost, we need this term to be negative. Okay, so what is this thing chi? This chi essentially measures the strength of the coupling to trace the energy momentum tensor, because if you actually reintroduce the energy momentum tensor, then you can schematically relate A, chi, and T in this way.
So this can you go back to the previous?
Yeah.
So the first term is just coming from the graviton coupling to the tensor.
So just comes from that.
And the second term is the induced term on the brain, or what?
So this first term is coming from the induced term on the brain. This term's coming from the bulk, essentially. We're integrating that.
So we can take away the brain term.
So if you just had 4 dGr, you just get that. Now you're going to say, right, that means we have a ghost.
No. We can throw away the brain term. It doesn't help us.
No. It is important, actually, because it's... there's going to be a subtlety later on that I'm going to want this to vanish. I'll become infinite or vanish. Now, I can't do that unless I've got this thing. Okay, so...
doesn't it depend on the tension on the brain?
It's sort of everything's come out in the wash. It's all... yeah, no. It in the sense that these can be related to the tension. Then, in fact, there's no reason why it would, I don't think. No, it doesn't depend on the tension. the tension has been fine-tuned against. The tension is no longer really a free parameter anymore. It's been fine-tuned against all the quantities in the bulk cosmological constant. So, not really a free parameter anymore. So I mean, it's fixed now. So, so you could say, yeah, it depends on the tension because it depends on these quantities which are related to the tension. Remember, we've got a flat brain here, and that fixes the tension precisely.
Yeah, but fine tune the tension with the bulk cosmology constant, right?
Yeah.
Where, and it doesn't depend on the bulk cosmology.
It does depend on the bulk cosmology constant. This is the K. K is related to the bulk cosmology constant.
So.
Okay.
So K. For various cases, you have different signs.
Yes. Yeah. Precisely. Going backwards. Okay, so like I said, this chi is sort of the strength of the coupling. So there's some interesting limits. Of course, the chi tends to infinity limit. This is the case that the radon decouples. This is decoupling limits, as you can see from this formula here. And chi goes to infinity is like you could get that by one of the k's going to zero. So that's kind of consistent because we said before that the radon decouples when we've got Minkowski space, and that's sort of the same as here. The other possible interesting limit is the chi tends to zero limit, which is like the strong coupling limit, if you like. I sometimes like to call it the conformal limit as well, because if you try to put a non-conformal matter source on the brain, you can't do that to linear order in perturbation theory. You have to, basically, linearized theory will break down in that scenario, and the geometry will actually respond non-linearly. So that's one of that's another interesting limit. So actually, you can also think of this conformal limit as a limit of enhanced symmetry, because the linearized field equations, they become invariant under this sort of enhanced symmetry. So this is what they become invariant under. And so okay, so this thing looks pure gauge in the book. Pure gauge in the bulk, so it's not a surprise that the field equations in the bulk are invariant under the bulk. So you only consider this region. Okay? Actually, in the cases that I'm going to consider, the interesting cases, it's actually going to turn out that F is actually monotonic, it just monotonically increases. Okay, so actually, we won't actually have this problem. Okay, so here's a subtlety now. So one thing you definitely need is you definitely need the derivative of F at the origin at zero, that has to be non-negative, essentially, because otherwise you're going to immediately fall below the axis, okay? And that's going to correspond to an isolated vacuum. You don't want that, okay? But remember, so this thing equals chi, right? So that's got to be non-negative. But remember, if chi is positive, we have a radion ghost. So this is kind of weird now, because what this means is that sort of a physically safe radion, so one where chi is negative, corresponds to an unphysical cosmology, vice versa. So this is kind of surprising. And you can actually sort of understand this result by, if you think about the absence of the 10 to 0 mode. So I'll just briefly go through that. So there's no 10 to 0 mode. So the large distance behavior, or late time behavior, is going to be dominated by the radion, if it exists. Okay? Because the radion, remember, the gauge invariant radion mode is massless as a tensor mode. Okay? Now, you can sort of project, you can find out what the Einstein tensor on the brain is by using this Gauss-Kadatze projection. And after linearizing, you find that you get this relationship. Okay, so let's put some matter back in there now, right? This is the Einstein tensor on the brain, and it's related to the energy momentum on the brain in this way. And I've got this chi up here today. I've missed the term off here, which if you're sharp, you might have noticed it if you know about this sort of stuff. But let me just not worry about it. It's basically a vile term that I could have put in here, but for the purpose of this argument, let me just forget about it. I mean, certainly for the cosmological solutions I've been looking at, the vile term's not there. So, anyway, this sort of equation of motion would come from this sort of effective action, like an effective 4D action, perhaps it'd look like this. So this gives us a natural interpretation for chi. It's essentially the effective 4D Planck scale. So, what does that mean? Well, if chi is positive, if you want a cosmology that makes sense, of course you've got to have chi is positive. See, it's the effective 4D Planck scale. However, now, let's take, just think of 4D GR, okay? And let's consider a perturbation, which is essentially just a conformal transformation of the Minkowski space. So it's just, you know, something tied to Minkowski space. That's all perturbation. If you chuck that back into the Einstein-Hilbert action in 4D GR, you get this. You'll actually get what looks like a scalar ghost coming out. It's known as the conformal ghost. It's not actually a problem in 4D GR because in 4D GR there's also this tensor zero mode. And those two modes actually mix. So it's not right to say, oh, you've got this conformal ghost, because you've really got to consider the tensor sector as well. However, here we don't have that tensor zero mode, but we've still got this conformal mode. So there's no tensor zero mode to save us from this conformal ghost. So this is why you get this sort of trade-off between bad cosmology, good radium. Okay? So the only way to get a consistent setup is to have no radium whatsoever. Okay. So here are the two possibilities. Okay, so you either want the radium to decouple completely, and that corresponds to the case if either side of the bulk is Minkowski. The other is that the radium gets eliminated by this extra symmetry in this conformal limit, chi equals zero. So these are the two scenarios we've been forced to consider now. Okay, so what do we need for acceleration? So for acceleration, right, we can talk about the effective equation of state parameter. Okay? Essentially just gives us a measure of how sort of fast we're accelerating, essentially. Okay, so to actually get acceleration, you need this effective equation of state parameter to drop below minus a third, although you might like to push it as close as possible to minus one, which would be like an effective cosmological constant. And we can actually calculate this effective equation of state parameter in our model, and it corresponds to this formula here. So omega here is the actual equation of state parameter, and this is the effective one. So if we had 4D GR, then it turns out that this C turns out to become 1, and you find that omega effective is just omega, what you'd expect. But in our sort of modified theory of gravity, this C is going to evolve in time, right? So we actually get an evolving effective equation of state parameter. So basically the question is, how low down can we push this effective equation of state parameter, or equivalently, how far down can we push C? And actually, assuming that the matter satisfies the strong energy condition, it turns out that you can get acceleration if C drops below 1. If it doesn't drop below 1, you can't get acceleration. Okay, so acceleration with a decoupled radium. Okay, so this is the situation where we've got Minkowski bulk on one side and ADS bulk on the other.
Is it decoupled, or its z function is equal to zero, so that you have to keep the stress energy tensor on the brain decoupled?
In this case, this one is really decoupled. In the conformal limit case, it's.
I see. So because of the fact that you said conformal limit slash Minkowski, so
there's two scenarios. It's this case with a decoupled radion, and there's the other one, which is the very strongly coupled radion, if you like.
Yeah. Which is bad, actually.
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe perhaps we could discuss that. I mean, I'm sort of not fully sure how to sort of interpret that.
Here, there just isn't radion. Forget it, and you can keep matter in the brain to be whatever you want.
Yeah.
And you don't have that problem with the sky business.
No. This is yes. So I'm going to discuss the other case shortly, but this. Okay, so this is the situation. So you've got 5d anti-de Sitter on one side. Now let's suppose you include the ADS horizon on that side, and it turns out you can't get acceleration, and you might have expected that, because if you've got the ADS horizon on this side, it means you've got a decaying warp factor, and that's going to induce a degree of localization on the brain. You really want sort of gravity to escape away from the brain to get some sort of acceleration, weakening of gravity, essentially. So if you want the ADS horizon, there's no way you're going to get acceleration, so you have to have the ADS boundary on the other side. And then essentially the graviton gets sort of drawn towards the ADS boundary. Gravity gets weakened on that side. So in that case, where you keep the ADS boundary on one side, this is what F looks like. And it's quite difficult to sort of deal with this analytically, as it turns out. So we don't do a great deal of that, but a few results that are worth noting. If the mass Planck scale on the ABS side is less than on the Minkowski side, turns out you can never get acceleration. Now, why does this make sense? Well, essentially, if you've got a... Remember, where does the graviton? The graviton on the ADS side wants to live near the ADS boundary. Okay, that's where it likes to live. If you've got a low Planck scale on that side, that means the graviton can propagate away from the ADS boundary quite easily and reach your brain. So it's not so delocalized, if you like. It's like less delocalization. So that's why you don't get acceleration in that case. So to get acceleration, you really need the Planck scale on the ADS side to be bigger. And then really you're trapping the graviton close to the ADS boundary. And then you can get C to be less than 1, and you can get cosmic acceleration. So just to see that you can get C to be less than 1 for very large values of C, this is what it asymptotically goes like, and it immediately drops below 1. Okay, to leading order. Actually, it turns out that F will increase monotonically if this condition holds. Now, I don't really know a great how to interpret this formula, so I'm not going to say anything about it. But it will increase monotonically if that is true. And if this is not, if this is not satisfied, there's no way you can get acceleration. This is just something that we found. If it is satisfied, you can get acceleration, and you get the most acceleration when it's almost equal. Now this is a good. That's the when you get the most.
What's
acceleration?
What's a good amount of acceleration?
Well, I guess.
You need a long acceleration.
Well, is that? Well, I think actually, from what?
Or
the
just
numerical approach,
as close to -1,
as close as possible to that. Yeah,
right.
That's what I mean by that. But actually, how long you accelerate for, of course, depends on whether you have matter or radiation. And actually, it turns out that come on to that very shortly, but so actually doing this analytically becomes very difficult. And I'm not so sure about this statement now. Numerical checks suggest that we can get C down to about 0.43, which for pressureless matter corresponds to an effective equation state of -0.57, which isn't as negative as you'd like, but still acceleration. Ruth has sent me an email this morning that I haven't had time to check out in any detail, but she seems to think that we can almost exactly mimic lambda CDM now. So quite what she means by that, I'm not so sure. So perhaps this might want fixing. But anyway, so here's an example of how C evolves. This is for the case where it's that inequality is almost equal. So this is just the behavior of C. So you see that it sort of approaches 1 at large values of H, and then it sort of decreases, and it hits some sort of minimum region here where there's a max, where you get a region of maximum acceleration, and then it starts to shoot back up like afterwards, and you actually get a sort of stiff matter type scenario at arbitrary rate times. So here's another couple of plots. This is the evolution of the co-weaving Hubble radius in time. I confess I don't know quite what parameters she set here. This is just an example. These are Ruth's plots, and she hasn't answered my email when I asked her those precise questions. But anyway, there's sort of schematics we have.
What's
to
the
expect
is 10, 20.
I don't know what's 10 of, unfortunately. So,
what's co-moving Hubble radius?
It's essentially 1 over AH.
Okay.
So 1 over A dot.
Sure.
Okay. So basically, acceleration means this is decreasing.
Yes, right.
So look at the matter picture, right? So this is, I don't know what she set to.
So you're saying this decreasing, so this is some kind of time, obviously.
Yeah, this is some sort of time,
And the other thing is, well, that's
1 over A dot.
Right.
That she did answer that question for me, yeah.
So, in the case of matter, you're sort of decreasing for a while. That means that you're simulating something like.
Well, you're actually decreasing for quite a long time, actually, so that's good.
Yeah, let's say, it looks that way.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on the normalization.
Yeah.
In the other case, you're not decreasing as fast, so it suggests a power law acceleration. Yes?
Well, they're both power law. Well,
they
both appeared, I think they're probably some sort of power law. This is just more acceleration.
Right, that's
and it's acceleration for longer
right.
as well.
Right.
this is actually, so this is also, you've just done the next couple of comments on my talk. So this is actually quite a lot, especially around here, there's quite a lot of acceleration. And it also seems to go on for longer. It doesn't really start to come back up until here. This is the radiation scenario. This is more like what's called coasting, so it's almost constant. Right?
And you're